You're listening to Civic Media. You can tune into any of our live shows on any radio station across the state with the Civic Media app. Find us in your phone's app store and listen anytime, anywhere.
7:06 right now, you are listening to Civic Media Mornings on the Civic Media Network. My name is Jamie Martinson.
And I'm Brian Noonan. Good morning. It is time for a text to win. Jamie, we're going to give people a chance to go to the state fair and see AJR before they can buy their tickets. And I don't know what any of those words meant, but I know what tickets and free and before they go on sale mean. I don't know AJR, but I'm sure people do, and they're very excited.
They probably are. AJR stands for Alex, Jack, and Ryan. They are three brothers who have a band. Some of their big hits include Bang, Way Less Sad, World's Smallest Violin, and Record Player. And as you mentioned, tickets do go on sale Friday morning, 10 a.m., wistatefair.com. But right now, you have a chance to beat the box office and text us in this keyword for a chance to potentially win a pair of tickets before they go on sale. So today's keyword is, well, we were just talking about this in the break. Record?
It's record.
Record? Record? All right.
Record.
Either way, it's spelled the same. R-E-C-O-R-D. R-E-C-O-R-D. That is the word that you need to get to us. You can text us that word through your Civic Media app. You can find it for free over at your Google store, your Apple store. Find your favorite Civic Media station and text the keyword record, record, R-E-C-O-R-D, for your chance to win a pair of tickets to AJR. You have until 8 a.m. to get us that word. And remember, they will be at the Wisconsin State Fair. All right. So with that, let's get on to business, huh?
Yeah, because we talk about tariffs all the time. We hear who pays them, who's supposed to pay them, who doesn't pay them. And then we also pay attention when tariffs hit close to home. A new piece in the Journal Sentinel says that Harley-Davidson, your favorite motorcycle company, paid an unbelievable amount of tariffs in 2025. Joining us now is the reporter who put that story to paper, Ricardo Torres. He is a reporter with the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. He covers business, politics, breaking news, every once in a while a sports story thrown in there because he's a well-rounded individual. You can read all his work at jsonline.com. Ricardo, good to have you here. Thanks very much for being here this morning. So let's not, to use a journalistic term, let's not bury the lead. Despite the administration telling us that other countries pay for tariffs, how much did Harley-Davidson have to pay in tariffs in 2025?
Harley-Davidson paid $67 million in tariffs all of 2025, which, believe it or not, is lower than what the company was expecting to pay back in May. The company thought at that time that they might have to pay as high as $175 million. Now, that was shortly after Trump announced tariffs on dozens of countries. And so the word the company uses is volatile. It was a very volatile year. So overall, they ended up paying less than what they thought they would pay about a year ago, but still $67 million.
So where did the biggest chunk of that come from? Was it the steel and aluminum that is used to make the motorcycles and their products?
Yeah, there was a 50% tariff on steel and aluminum, which cost Harley-Davidson about $31 million. In terms of which country Harley-Davidson had to pay tariffs to, or which country that they did business with that impacted them the most, Canada was one of the highest with 35%, which cost the company $8 million. And then there were tariffs on China, Mexico, India, Thailand, and the European Union, which cost the company $17 million.
Let's go back to what you said before. What made the company believe back in May that they were going to have to pay so much more? Now, $67 million is nothing to sneeze at, but $175 is crazy. Was it just market prices? You mentioned volatility. What gave them that number?
So this was just their projections at the time. They weren't really sure how much they were going to pay, what tariffs were going to stick. There were a lot of threats of tariffs last year that ended up not being as high as what the president originally said that he wanted to put on countries. And there were other times when it was just slightly lower or not at all. There was a 90-day pause on tariffs for China, which helped save the company millions of dollars. So this was just a company that was doing what a lot of companies were doing last year, which was just kind of guessing what these impacts would be. And at the end of the year, yes, $67 million is still $67 million. And Harley Davidson needs every dollar it could get.
Mm-hmm. We're talking with Ricardo Torres. He is a journalist over at Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, jsonline.com. If you want to check out his work, he covers business, politics, and breaking news. Now, as we kind of look ahead a little bit, Harley says that they expect tariffs in 2026 could reach, again, probably broad based on what we know or what projections are, but $75 to $105 million. So why do they think that costs will rise over the next year based off of projections from last year into, you know, this coming year?
I think that's just a conservative estimate on the company's part. They're trying to prepare as best as they can for whatever the administration throws at them in terms of tariffs. And so they're doing what a lot of companies are doing, which is trying to, you know, bake in some sort of expectations of what could happen in the future, because $75 and $105 million is a really big difference. And so this is something that the company is just trying to manage along with other companies.
So, Ricardo, I'm probably like a lot of people. I hear Harley and I think 100% American. And then then we learn all the things that have to be imported. Does Harley have any plans to do more U.S. sourcing? Are they trying to find things that would cut down that $67 million that they're having to pay in tariffs?
Well, Harley says three of their four biggest manufacturing centers are based in the United States, and their core U.S. product is manufactured in the United States. So they emphasize to investors and to analysts that they do a lot of their product. They make a lot of it here at home. But that being said, there are components that they import from places like China and other countries overseas. So they're trying to mitigate that as much as they can, and they're trying to be in contact with the administration as much as they can. They even said on their presentation that they're grateful for the U.S. administration and Congress for continuing to listen to Harley Davidson as these discussions go on.
You mentioned that they're trying to mitigate the tariff impacts. And have they said what that looks like in practice at this point?
At this point, they haven't been so specific as to what changes they're going to make. Again, they make a lot of their products on the United States. And so I would imagine that they would probably, if they wanted to move some of their supply chain home or to countries where there is more favorable tariff rates. But again, this is still a very volatile situation, and they're trying to manage it as best they can.
Now, for people who ride Harleys, who are in the market for Harleys, we know if they're paying $67 million more in tariffs, it would make sense that that cost would be passed down to the consumer. Has there been any talk of that? How are the numbers that you reported on affecting consumers?
So Harley Davidson wasn't specific as to how they're paying for these tariffs. And so they could theoretically pass it on to the customer, or they could eat the cost themselves. After their third quarter results, if you want to move back about 6 months or so, they recorded a profit of $377 million. Okay. And that was in due large part to them selling their financial division a deal that was about $5 billion. So they had some cash to play with and to not put that burden on the customers, because they already have kind of an expensive bike if you want to get a new one, which is a problem that Harley Davidson is trying to reduce. They know that they have issues with affordability, and they're planning later on this year to introduce a bike that is about $6,000 or less to try to get consumers, younger consumers that don't have the expendable income for $15,000, $20,000, $25,000 bike. Maybe we could put something together a little bit they wouldn't say cheaper. They would say not as expensive, but right. But
cheaper is how you and I talk. So we'll go with cheaper.
All companies avoid the C word.
Of course.
Right, right. Tom from Hartford chiming in on WMDX texting saying, are they hoping for higher sales? Is that anything that you got out of your reporting? Are they hoping with maybe the $6,000 price point to maybe have more sales or even sell some of their more luxury bikes to those who can actually afford some of their increased prices potentially?
Absolutely, they would love more sales.
Yeah. Every company would.
Yeah, I was going to say, that doesn't wants set them sales. Apart.
At the end of the fourth quarter last year, their sales in North America rose 5%, which is a good direction. And even for its electric motorcycle division, LimeWire, which the company spun off into a separate company, those sales for those motorcycles went up 9%. Now, when you talk about percentages, you could kind of play with the numbers differently depending on what kind of results you want to portray to people. But they do have some positive bright spots out there, some optimism.
Is it other than the fact that they're not sure what their tariff costs will be in 2026? Did they lay out any other expectations for the upcoming year, or is it kind of are they in a wait and see holding pattern?
So they have a big strategic plan coming up in May, which they weren't very specific about. So I'm anticipating them talking about lowering prices and the less expensive bikes. As I mentioned before, they talked on the call about customization, which I thought was interesting, that they want to really lean into the individuality of riders. Their new CEO, Artie Starrs, he mentioned this anecdote in which he went to a hog meeting in Milan and all these riders were talking to him about their bikes, and it was really part of their identity. And so he wants to lean into that more, but Harley-Davidson already offers customization for some of its components. So I'm not exactly 100% sure like what exactly is changing there. And so that's something that I'm looking into for a future story, and hopefully I could get some more answers and report back to you guys.
That would be great.
Great, yeah.
What's next on, what are you covering today when you go in? What's the story?
So like I said, still following up on Harley-Davidson. There's been some changes with EPA and emissions at the Trump administration that we're wondering how does that impact local companies. And I always got to keep myself flexible just in case something breaks. You never know.
Absolutely.
Well, it's good to talk to you. Ricardo Torres is a journalist for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. You can read all his work at jsonline.com. Ricardo, always a pleasure. Good to talk to you. And for those who don't know, Ricardo and I go way back. Just he was actually one of my very first producers in another lifetime. But congratulations on everything. Great work on this Harley-Davidson story, and we will talk to you again soon.
Thank you.
Thank you so much. Have a great day. It is 7:19 right now. You are listening to Civic Media Mornings. My name is Jamie Martinson.
And I'm Brian Noonan. Oh, ICE is not only affecting citizens, now it's affecting Girl Scouts, who are also citizens. Yeah,
cookies
are in danger. We have to talk about it, and we'll do that next on the Civic Media Network.
You're listening to Civic Media. Stay up to date on the latest news and information for your local community and Wisconsin by signing up for our free email newsletter. Visit civicmedia.us/email to get started.
We hope you are having a great start to your, are we on Thursday? Wednesday?
I don't know what day it is.
Is it Thursday? I'm so screwed up this week.
Frank didn't know what day it was yesterday.
So screwed up this week.
You don't know what day
Thursday.
It is
Thursday. It's almost a weekend. You're listening to Civic Media Mornings on the Civic Media Network. My name is Jamie Martinson.
And I'm Brian Noonan. And if you're counting on me to be the one who remembers days and is most organized, you are all in a lot of trouble. But it is Thursday. We are glad you're here. 855-75-CIVIC, 855-752-4842. And you have about 27 minutes?
Yes.
To text in record or record.
Whichever.
Either. R-E-C-O-R-D. And then you'll be eligible for a chance to win some AJR tickets to the State Fair. Oh, the State Fair is coming. I cannot wait. It'll be good to get a little fried dough and some other things.
Oh, sounds amazing.
Just wander around in the heat.
Win those tickets before they even go on sale tomorrow morning at 10 a.m. And remember, you got to text us through your Civic Media app. Just select your favorite station and text us that word, again, R-E-C-O-R-D, record, record, whichever you prefer this morning. Yeah. We won't hold it against you, however you want to
pronounce
it.
You don't have to say it to us. You just have to type it.
Yeah.
So type it the same way. Oh, once again, your mood lighting in the studio.
I know, the sun
if
is coming in.
That, yeah. Sometime, I know we're glad you're listening on your terrestrial stations or on the app. We love that. If you ever get a chance at about this time every morning to tune into the YouTube stream and see the sun come in and cascade across Jamie as she delivers the facts and opinions on the day, it's quite startling.
Well, I would pull the blinds.
No, it's not. I mean, startling in a good way.
It's startling. It's fine.
I don't know. You just got to start wearing sunglasses.
I would pull the blinds, except it reflects off of the glass building that right across the road from us, then that directly reflects back into the studio. So it actually, and it's just low enough that it actually wouldn't help, and I'd have to be in complete darkness. We'll work on it, though. I'm already in complete darkness, so it's fine.
I was going to say, facts don't function in the dark. Isn't that
I am seeing spots, though. It's really hard to read anything that I have written down right now, but it's good.
Parker,
we're good.
Aren't you supposed to just go in there and block the sun from Jamie's eyes?
I can just hold up my hand there.
Here we go. This is natural. Yeah. This is what everybody should look like.
There's our street cam if you're wondering what we're dealing with here.
That street cam.
But it's a beautiful morning. It's a beautiful morning. So enjoy another couple of days of warmer weather before it gets a little cold for the next few and gets more winter-like again. Let's just say that.
That's right. And if you need a little treat, maybe this is the time of year you would love a Girl Scout cookie, and you've been thinking, well, Brian, yeah, that's all well and good. I'd love me some Thin Mints or Tagalongs, but no young ladies have knocked on my door. Yeah, that's probably not going to happen. It's been happening for a while where the Girl Scouts have been kind of shying away from the door-to-door things, because let's be honest, there's a lot of creeps behind a lot of doors.
There's a lot of awful people out there.
There are a lot of awful people. But this year it's a little bit different, because the Girl Scouts River Valley's cookie program is going digital. That includes 48 counties here in Minnesota and Wisconsin, plus Osceola County in Iowa, and they're doing it because ICE. ICE is scaring off some of the Girl Scouts and their families and forcing them to go online because they don't want to be out selling cookies. And I'll let you decide if that's sad or not.
Well, through March 29th, customers can buy cookies using the Girl Scouts digital cookie platform, where individual scouts create these online storefronts and then share their links through social media, text, and email. Some of the booths and those in-person sales will still happen, but there's going to be fewer than usual. Who doesn't love to go into a grocery store and come out and hand some cute little Girl Scouts money and take your favorite Girl Scout cookie home? Mine would be a Thin Mint, but, you know, I digress. Now, leaders say that the cookie program remains the world's largest girl-led entrepreneurship program. It teaches skills like goal setting and money management, and also business ethics. This year,
some of these girls are tough business people.
They really are.
They're like seven, and they're haggling, or upselling. It's like, all right, easy, Sash Monster.
I'll
buy another box.
I love it. So this year, there's a virtual group called Troop 2026. It was created to support scouts whose cookie sales have been disrupted, and it allows people to buy cookies while helping fund Girl Scout programs, trips, and community projects. Now, I did a little digging into this, and outside of COVID, when, you know, obviously we weren't doing in-person sales or going door-to-door, and everything was already shut down and things were moving online. The last time Girl Scouts had to stop traditional door-to-door cookie sales was during World War II. Back then, there was rationing of sugar, flour, and butter, and obviously it made baking cookies nearly impossible, so the Girl Scouts pivoted to selling calendars and even collecting scrap metal to raise money until cookie sales returned after the war. My point to all of this is you have to go back to World War II to the Girl Scouts collecting scrap metal to understand, or a global pandemic, to understand that the fact that they can't sell cookies in a traditional manner is just sad. It's sad.
And what do two of those have in common? Nazis. But I digress.
So if you think about this for a second, though, I mean, war rationing, deadly pandemic, and now immigration enforcement concerns are the reasons that these girls can't sell cookies in a traditional manner.
It's hard. It's a hard thing because I didn't have a problem when Molly was a Girl Scout and they started saying, well, try to do it a different way so you're not going door to door. She still did a lot of door to door. My wife would go with her and they'd go, you know, on a Saturday morning and they'd hit the neighborhood or right after work. But that part, it's the reason behind it. If you choose not to walk with your daughter door to door, that's one thing. But if you're afraid to leave your house because people are getting snatched off the street,
you might not make it back home. Literally.
Right. And right. So that's where the problem becomes or comes in. So listen, I'm always a fan of supporting Girl Scout. However you get the cookies, you know,
right.
We bought ours this year outside of a Trader Joe's.
Love it.
And that girl, man, oh man, she upsold my wife like nobody's business.
Radio salespeople could learn a thing or two from those Girl Scouts. Yeah, let me tell you, go support them online. Go support them online and buy your Girl Scout cookies.
Exactly.
It is 7:29 right now. You're listening to Civic Media Mornings. My name is Jamie Martinson.
And I'm Brian Noonan. When we come back, we'll talk about gerrymandering in Wisconsin and what can be done. We'll do it on the Civic Media Network.
You're listening to the Civic Media Network. This is Civic Media Mornings. Good morning to Wisconsin Rapids, listening on WFHR, La Crosse on WLCX, Richland Center, WRCE. We are so glad that you are joining us. My name is Jamie Martinson.
And good morning, I'm Brian Noonan. Don't forget, you have a few minutes left to text RECORD or record, RECORD, to 85575-CIVIC. Use your Civic Media app to text in, and you will be registered for a chance to win some AJR tickets to the state fair. So get those before they go on sale. One of the big pieces of news that came out of Tuesday night's State of the State address by Governor Evers was that he was going to sign an executive order calling for the legislature into special session later in the spring to hopefully pass a constitutional amendment that bans partisan gerrymandering in Wisconsin. This has been an ongoing talk, not only in Wisconsin, but across the country. We're joined now by Yuseli Flores. She is the Fair Maps Coalition Director. You can go to fairmapsmi.com to get all the information on the coalition. Yuseli, thanks for being here. We appreciate it.
Thanks. I'm so excited to be here.
So tell us a little bit about Fair Maps Coalition, what you guys do, and how you responded when you heard the governor's call the other night for a special session to hopefully ban gerrymandering in Wisconsin.
Yeah, well, I mean, we were really excited, but we were also sort of anxious to know what that looks like, because we too don't know what that process will look like, given that constitutional amendments in Wisconsin, because we don't have a ballot initiative process, they have to pass joint resolution in the legislature in two consecutive sessions. So then it's like, okay, you're going to call a special session for this, but then we still have to put that on the ballot, and then voters will then still have to decide. And if we don't have concrete legislation to introduce an independent redistricting commission, we can see what is happening in Virginia where the legislature is attempting to reverse something like an independent redistricting commission there. So we want to make sure that the process that we work towards will ban gerrymandering in Wisconsin forever, and it isn't just a Band-Aid on a huge, huge wound.
Let's take a step back for just a moment, because there's a lot of people new to the conversation, and we hear the word gerrymandering thrown out a lot, not only in this state, but across the country. Explain to us what it is, and why does this matter to everyday Wisconsin voters, Yuseli?
Yeah, well, you know, this is gerrymandering, and in layman's terms, it's just the practice of legislative officials when they are in office, and then when they have a majority, or they redraw electoral district boundaries to give their one singular political party an unfair advantage over the other. And it involves manipulating maps in ways to either PAC, which would put opposing voters into fewer districts or crack them across many, making sure that the controlling party wins more seats.
So let's go back over the last, say, 10 to 15 years. How has that looked in Wisconsin? Because we know some new maps went into effect 2 years ago, but what has led us up to this point?
Yeah, well, you know, ironically, since the 80s, since 81, 91, and 2001, partisan bickering has resulted in Wisconsin legislative district maps to be drawn by federal judges. And then in 2009, Democrats controlled the governor's office and both chambers. They had a trifecta. Despite this, they didn't pass any sort of nonpartisan redistricting laws. And they thought that they were going to keep winning and that they would have likely drawn maps favoring their party. But we know that wasn't the case. We know that that didn't happen. And it created more, you know, it created partisanship. It created what we call is that gerrymandering is a bipartisan disease. Even though more voters across between 2010 and 2020 statewide chose Democrats in the state assembly and in the Senate, the Democrats actually lost seats, even though they won 4 of 5 statewide races. And this is due to gerrymandering. One of my favorite fun facts is that gerrymandering is a word created by, in the US, it's an American word, Elbridge Gerry, 1810. And so if you translate this, and I give a presentation on fair maps and redistricting in Spanish all the time, I have to say that gerrymandering means manipulating the election.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. We're joined by Yuseli Flores. She is the Fair Maps Coalition Organizing Director, fairmapswi.com. Now, Yuseli, I think it's interesting because as we stated, Governor Evers calling for the special session was a little unexpected, I think, on Tuesday night. He has been an advocate of fair maps, but he's not going to be in office during the next redistricting process. So does that create a little bit more urgency for something to be done and more permanent maps be in place?
Most definitely. Our goal, because the Fair Maps Coalition drafted a proposal for an independent redistricting bill, we are currently looking for bipartisan support in Wisconsin amongst candidates and those running for office, including those already in office, to push for the passage of an IRC or Independent Redistricting Commission in January by the new state legislature. And our goal is then to strive towards a constitutional amendment due to the fact that it needs to pass in 2 consecutive legislative sessions. And for that to happen, the governor's signature isn't required. So we had a timeline, and it's kind of like one of those bumps in the matrix of the timeline where we're like, all right, we have to get more people on this. We need to tell more people about gerrymandering. We need to tell more people about our process to get equal buy-in now that this is sort of in the eyes of a lot of folks, right? He named it, and now we have to just, you know, remind folks that this is a long process.
Now, Yuseli, the Fair Maps Coalition has a three-phase plan that wants to ensure fair redistricting, but you want to get it done before the 2030 census. First of all, what's the three-phase plan, and why is that date so important to try to get everything done before then?
So our first phase was to do an educational campaign. Last year, we were in 34 different cities talking about redistricting and what an IRC would look like. We plan to be in 60 this year. The second step would be to pass legislation through the Senate and Assembly and then have it signed by the governor, which would our goal would hopefully be in January of 2027, and then pass a constitutional amendment before the 2030 census. So by the redistricting cycle, we would have something where Wisconsinites feel like, although they agree on many things, they're not getting the things that they agree on. And so finally, they'll have some representation. Although we currently have fairer maps, they're still not enough for what Wisconsinites actually want.
It's almost like, you know, representatives are trying to pick their constituents versus constituents picking their representatives, right? Based off of your three-phase plan, what does success look like for the Fair Maps Coalition just within the next year? What would be the first thing that needs to be tackled before probably the end of 2026?
Yeah, if we could get, you know, candidates that are on the ballot to say that they support redistricting, an independent redistricting commission, if we can host more town halls, especially as we see new candidates across all aisles, right? This is a, I just said it earlier, gerrymandering is a bipartisan disease. So we're going to need all parties to play together and to really strive for a Wisconsin that really represents us and for a Wisconsin model when it comes for independent redistricting legislation.
It sounds like a perfect plan, which in unfortunately to me means there's no chance that it could work, because as what progress do you think will or can come? I mean, we saw that the Supreme Court had to draw the maps the last time. We can't get the two parties to agree because they want to hold on to power. Like you said, that's what it's all about. So as much as I think this is 100% needed and should have been done a long time ago, I've been around long enough to see that we can't get the people to disagree. How do you think this can actually come about?
Especially as we're seeing shifts in political ideology across the nation, whether, you know, whatever people's ideology is, especially in Wisconsin that traditionally has been purple, I think Republicans know that they might need an independent redistricting commission to have representation over the next 10 years. Because that cultural shift, my favorite fun fact is that every 30 seconds, a Latino in the US turns 18, like they are voting with their parents in mind. They are voting with the separation of families in mind. So that cultural shift, the ideological shift, the political shift is going to have to force some people to play across the aisle in order to get some constituents' representation in the districts that they want to serve, regardless of whatever political party they are. And if they don't have that in the next, you know, 3 years before 2030, there will be a huge shift.
We're talking with you, Sally Flores. She is the Fair Maps Coalition Organizing Director. If you want to check out some of their work, fairmapswi.com. Now, I want to, as we talk about the Independent Redistricting Commission and we talk about fair maps and redrawing, what would banning all of this partisan gerrymandering, how would it change elections, and how would a representation in this state change if we just didn't have gerrymandering in a perfect world? Let's pretend that wasn't a thing. What would it look like? What would it look like in Wisconsin, Yuseli?
Well, you know, like people in Wisconsin, regardless of what political party they support, they agree on what they want from their government. So this is from a Marquette poll. But 87% of folks want universal background checks for gun purchases in Wisconsin. 77% want citizen-led ballot initiatives, which we don't have. 76% want increased renewable energy efforts. 72% want an action to regulate carbon pollution, and so on and so on. And the only way we can fix this for good is to take the map drawing process away from politicians and give it to an IRC to make these voting maps fair for everyone.
Is another justification for everything you said, which makes perfect sense, the fact that the fairer maps that went into effect 2 years ago, they seem to be working. Maybe not to one or two candidates, you know, it didn't work out for them, but overall it's working. So is that further a good step toward what the ultimate goal is?
Yeah, that further proves our theory that Wisconsin is very purple, and that although they are fairer, we still have work to do. Yeah. The model was also sort of a least change approach model, or that was sort of some of the agreements when governor's maps were selected. And least change approach, that just means that most of the gerrymandered maps from 2010 were almost kept because those were just part of the wrinkles in the work. Yeah. But in 2024, we saw that by using fairer maps in February, it most accurately represented Wisconsin's partisan balance.
Now, this is obviously an issue for both political parties. It also affects independent voters. So for anybody listening this morning who is just like, I'm tired of talking about maps, I want our elections to be fair, what can they do? What sort of initiatives are there out there for them, and how can they be involved in moving this forward, Yuseli? We have about a minute left.
All right. Well, you can call your legislator and tell them you heard a very spicy Latina on civic media talking about redistricting. You can write a letter to the editor that you support an independent redistricting and that gerrymandering is a bipartisan disease. You can follow us on social media at Wisconsin Fair Maps Coalition. You can go to fairmapsweed.com and sign our newsletter and many, many other things. Just stay involved.
A lot of things that we can all do to make sure that this disease is someday cured. Yuseli, thank you so much. Yuseli Flores is the Fair Maps Coalition Organizing Director. FairMapsWe.com is the website. Yuseli, have a great rest of your day. Thanks for being here.
Bye, y'all.
You're listening to Civic Media Mornings on the Civic Media Network at 7:48.
You're listening to Civic Media. Find the latest news, information, and archives of all your favorite shows on the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us.
7:52 right now. You're listening to Civic Media Mornings on the Civic Media Network. My name is Jamie Martinson.
And I'm Brian Noonan. I was waiting to hit the post. I was hoping Parker would play Puppy Love. Coming into
it is puppy love. Coming, it's just no words.
It's the no verb. Yeah. It's the karaoke puppy love.
All right, I can't remember all the lyrics from my days of being a Donny Osmond fan back in the day.
Were you a big Donny Osmond fan?
Oh man, you know, I actually had some Osmond Brothers records.
Did you? My mom did too. Yes.
Crazy Horses when they tried to go metal, and it was if you ever here's a prize. Here's your homework. Go and search out Crazy Horses by the Osmond Brothers. And for some reason, it still sticks in my head because there's this...
Yes. Sounds like a weird slide whistle that went wrong.
Yeah, it was insanity.
I'm not familiar. Whatever I just heard, that band is not capable of rock. Surely not.
Well, that's Donnie is a solo.
Yes.
Donnie as a solo was a teen heartthrob.
Much different.
He was on the cover of every, Jamie can probably attest to this, the cover of every teen magazine, Teen Beat, Tiger Beat.
Oh, yeah.
All of them. Donnie Osmond was
He was a little before my time. I remember the 1980s Donnie Osmond. And he had that, I can't remember the name of the song from the 1980s that Donnie Osmond had.
Not a little bit country, a little bit rock and roll with
Sister Marie.
He had one
hit in the 80s. I'll have to look it up while we're talking here.
Oh,
do you remember which one I'm talking about?
When he tried to rock hard.
When he tried to have that comeback. Uh-huh. Yes. Oh, my gosh. Now it's going to bother me.
I think that's actually when he fought Danny Bonaducci. That was worlds colliding. Donnie Osmond was to...
Soldier of Love. Soldier of Love. There we go. Sorry.
All right.
That's all right. He was to white top 40 music as Michael Jackson was to R&B and soul music. He was the youngest in the brother band until they brought Jimmy Osmond in.
Yes.
And Jimmy was, come on.
Yeah,
stop.
Nobody cared about
Jimmy. All right, why are we talking about Donny Osmond? Well, because a fan, are you really a fan if you sue your favorite artist?
No.
They're suing, they filed a lawsuit against Donny Osmond for an injury. an injury they received during Donnie's Las Vegas residency at Harris Showroom. How could they even identify that it was, in fact, Donny Osmond?
He doesn't look the same.
No.
He doesn't look anything like he did even 10 years ago.
I don't want to say it's plastic surgery.
There's a lot pulled, tucked, and being held into place by pins and tape, I think, right now. That's
Donnie's
my
man
take.
Bun is actually human flesh on the back of his head that has been pulled so tight.
It might be. But this particular fan, her name is Joanne Jolkolowski, and she claims that she was hit in the back of the head by a light-up ball that was tossed into the crowd during a February 2024 performance. Now, these glowing balls are part of a regular audience. It's not a euphemism. Are part of an audience interaction segment in this particular show. According to this lawsuit, the impact caused a retinal detachment that required surgery. And Joanne says that she's still dealing with ongoing vision problems along with head and neck injuries. Now, I have several questions. My first question is, how hard were people throwing this ball off the stage? What size was it? And why? And was it just
what kind of lit balls are they spinning around at this concert? I assumed it was like a light up beach ball, which you see, or a light something. Donny Osmond, first of all, is 107 years old. He's not going to be throwing out concrete medicine balls. They're not doing kettlebell lifts during a Donny Osmond concert because of all
his
the joint
replacement.
His tape
would pop and then his face would melt down. So we can't do any of that.
He'd look like one of those a bloodhound. His jowls would just
everything would just droop. It would be bad. But
plus,
this,
how hard, could, like you said, Jamie, how hard could
you have to
be
winging
in the
those
back of the head to detach your retina?
Like, I'm thinking, like, if it's a smaller ball, like tennis ball size, like, that would hurt.
Those don't light up.
But that's not, it's not going to light up, and it's not going to, like, give you head and neck injuries, I wouldn't think. If it's a beach ball, you have to be winging that thing. And
there's no way, I don't care if I didn't
take
the beach ball out of the package.
No.
And I took a case of beach balls and hit you in the back of the head, it wouldn't detach your retina.
It would not detach the retina. So this lawsuit names Donny Osmond personally, his concert company, and Harrah's Las Vegas as defendants, and Joanne is now seeking more than $15,000 in damages. Now, obviously, Donny has not publicly commented on this case, and the casino has not yet issued a statement either. In case you're wondering, and in case you're upset with us right now for making fun of Donny Osmond and all of his cosmetic procedures, he does have a Las Vegas residency that is still scheduled to continue through late this year. So,
good for him.
You know, he's still performing, and Marie once in a while pops up on stage with him. They do
and
their
I
one duet,
say,
and they move on.
When anytime I see Donny Osmond in an interview or something, he seems like a good guy.
Yeah.
I mean, he's got the Mormon background, and they had this whole public image as a family, and it all, you know, you didn't hear a lot of scandals coming out of the Osmond family.
No.
Marie had a few marriages, but I had a huge crush on Marie. She was gorgeous.
Great.
Now she doesn't look
well. Well, between her and Donnie,
and I know I shouldn't judge a woman.
I get it.
Looks mogging. What am I doing, Parker?
Oh my
I'm doing
God.
One of those things. I'm doing something.
Parker's not even going to respond. He's just going to stay out of it. He's going to let you keep talking. It's fine.
I didn't expect a maxing and a mogging.
Of course you didn't. That's what makes me so weird.
That's something.
Between Donnie and Marie, there's enough Botox to basically go around a third world country. There just really, really, truly is. It's just, it's a lot.
Would you go to, now I'm thinking about, like, if we were in Vegas, mm-hmm. my wife and I think she might want to go see Donny Osmond in his residency.
If he starts
I don't know
with
what
Soldier
a ticket
of
to
Love. I'm in. And then if he ends with Soldier of Love, I'm also in.
Come
but
on, you don't want to see One Bad Apple? You don't want to hear that
song?
One
bad apple's not bad.
One bad apple.
There we go. You know, Lynn's trying to figure it out. She's like, were they rubber balls? Big diameter? I don't know. She's texting
know.
In
we
over
got,
on it.
We got to get
HD2.
Jamie, this is right up your alley. You need to do
we'll
a
do
deep dive into Osmond Productions.
There we go.
Get their budget, see what kind of balls were bought and Soldier why they
up.
Light up.
7:59 right now, Civic Media Mornings on the Civic Media Network. Thank you for joining us today.
We'll talk to you again tomorrow.
The national news cycle never stops, but it can be hard to find news about your local community. Civic Media is dedicated to providing quality local and state news coverage across Wisconsin. With the Civic Media app, you can get notifications about local stories that matter to you and your community. Find the free Civic Media app in your phone's app store and choose notifications from the menu to tell us what kind of news you want to hear about.